just a couple more paragraphs. I want you to hear it from someone like Frank Lloyd Wright. Notice here, notice that the language is written on the page. We're using the 3,700-year-old technique of writing on the page, but look what's happening. Look at the way in which it's being read. I'm not reading the words. I'm reading the words as a whole different emphasis. If I'm here reading the words, what was the old saying? You can lift the words off the page. That is true aspiration. To lift the words of your destiny off the pages of your life into freedom. That's what it's all about. That's entirely possible. Every day. Architecture now becomes integral, the expression of a new old reality, the livable interior space of the room itself. In integral architecture, the room space, room hyphen space, the room space itself must come through. The room must be seen as architecture, or we have no architecture. We have no longer an outside as outside. We have no longer an outside and an inside as two separate things. Now the outside may come inside, and the inside may and does go outside. They are of each other. Form and function thus become one in design and execution if the nature of materials and method and purpose are all in unison. This interior space concept, the first broad integrity, is the first great resource. It is also true basis for general significance of form. Add to this, for the sake of clarity, that although the general integration is implied in the first integrity, it is in the nature of any organic building to grow from its site, come out of the ground into the light. The ground itself held always as a component basic part of the building itself. Do you remember the slides that I showed you of Henry Moore going there to Carrara? And when the great blocks, raw blocks of marble were cut, he did the same thing Michelangelo did, the same thing any artist will do. He went with his hands to touch the reality, to feel the unborn sculptures within. It's in the hands. Anyone who works with art feels that. There it is. It's the laying on of hands of life to give life to this reality. It's like birthing a child to give life. The ground itself is always as a component, a basic part of the building itself. This is not only true of art in architecture, but notice how protean this is. The land upon which a person lives is holy because it is the true ground from which you now live. The American Indian prayer is very specific. I am holy as I move. I am holy standing here. Without understanding that primordiality, that continuity of you and the land, that cannot be said. It can be said as a rhetorical flourish, but it can be really said as a prayer if you are living that. Then the land is holy, and whatever land you live on is yours, and that life is legitimate. This is a holy land. The ground itself held always as a component, basic part of the building itself, so that the building, its form and structure and space and everything, are released from the land. And then we have primarily the new ideal of building as organic, a building dignified as a tree in the midst of nature. And he goes on to talk about general culture and various elements like glass and steel. We have in Los Angeles right now a beautiful example of this, the building of the Getty Museum. The architect has lived on the site off and on for over a year to just feel the land. What kind of winds blow late in the afternoon in May? What kind of light is there in September at noon? What are the qualities of the stars at night in February? There's a deep kind of a sense of this. And hopefully the Getty will be really built well. It's got a good head start. It's got the right organic method working. I think the architect's name is Richard Meyer, and I think he's quite adequate to the task. The best example of this building, if you get a chance to go, is in San Rafael, California, the Marin County Civic Center. When you go to the Marin County Civic Center, no photograph discloses the building because the architecture is not there in a static composition. Remember that the architecture, if organic, exists as space, as living space. Your life and its space as one, motion. It's only at the pace of walking that the Marin County Civic Center comes into being. The average person walks a little under 2 miles an hour. And at that pace, the Marin County Civic Center, its proportions rise up off the plan, off the site, and orchestrate a flow of streamlined consciousness. And if you're in any kind of awareness, it's like being in a meditation. Now, the closest thing in Los Angeles to this is the Gamble House in Pasadena. But there, instead of having the whole development, one idea is amplified to the artistic extent that the building space resonates with it. The idea at the Gamble House is the Japanese cloud motif, which is somewhat like a squashed Greek omega. And that structural design and the whole emotional tone of clouds informs the architectural structure of the Gamble House. But you have to be there a long while. You have to be there at least a couple of hours and looking, 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 open, 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 feeling, feeling, feeling. And the house will give you that expression. What is the expression? It's a kinesthetic expression of scuffing clouds that when you walk, you're in the cloud realm. Where does it come from? It comes from the architecture. Just like at Marin County Civic Center. If you're really conscious and you spend a whole day there, you can come out at the maximum speed of light. And when you come out, the landscape of Marin County sings to you. Because you're moving in the same way in which that landscape is. And you're walking not on man's earth, but on God's earth. That is a whole different experience. And that's what we're after. We're after to bring that into manifestation, not just for ourselves, but for those who will come to us or depend on us. Well, now we have at least one painting and maybe a couple of others. I want to get to those. So let's come to Dolores and your painting. This is the first of the paintings.
No, not that I don't need it yet. I brought two paintings. One that I had done maybe some 20 years ago, and it was in storage, and it wasn't really complete. It was a transitional period where I was, I guess, trying to go into geometrics and hard edge from figurative drawing. And so I loved the figures, and I just put it away. And when I got to this project, I happened to see, and I don't know what it was, but a picture of, how do you pronounce it, Tetrakis,
yeah.
And I didn't really know what it was, but it was four dogs going around. And I don't know where I saw it, but that triggered what I was going to do for this project, because that's what my old painting was, and I didn't know the symbol or anything at the time. So I thought, I'll bring that out, and maybe I'll be inspired and do another one and see where, because I haven't painted for 18 years. I haven't lifted a brush. So it was very exciting to me to put this big painting up and then see where I would go from there. I would take another painting, another canvas, and then see what would happen. So I want to show you this one that was in storage for all these years. It wasn't really complete.
You need some help with that? John, you want to help her? Thanks. Thank you.
The thing is, the figures, at the time, that's what I did.
Let's rest it on her chair.
Okay.
Or set it up there. Let's close that window for a minute. Can we stand it? Maybe open that other window if you want. Thanks, John.
When I went into figurative drawing, I mean, it would just flow. I would do all these distorted forms, and it just, I didn't even have to sketch. But when I came back and I did my little sketch, I tried to do it, and it just wouldn't come. I mean, I couldn't make the distorted forms, and I was going to have the dogs maybe come out of the tunnels or God knows what. But I did a sketch, and I started on my little canvas. And it didn't turn out that way. So then I'll show you how it turned out. It just changed.
What year would this be?
This was about
69.
It was in the 60s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll set that down now in front of the fireplace and display the second one. Okay. Great. And this was done?
This was done now.
Now, okay. Very good. Thank you.
The light isn't that good, but we need some light.
Do you want that light on there?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it was a different plane. So what surprised me, I said, the heck with that painting, you know, I just can't do it. There's nothing I can do. So I put it away, didn't even look at it. And then I thought, well, this is three different paintings going at once, but then I stood back and I realized that I had put four symbols in there. And what it is you had spoken about it in your class on Pythagoras, and it is the same thing. It's the four notes of harmony, and it's resounding, and they're little invisible notes going all through there. I don't know if you can all see that. But that's what this developed, and I thought it was magic. I mean, I was so thrilled because I have not lifted that brush for 18 years. And I thought, my God, you know, I'm going to paint again. And it's all my family kept saying, well, when are you going to start painting? And I said, well, I'm going to these classes. I don't know. I'm not ready and all this sort of thing. And here I
go to your class, and I end up, I'm so thrilled, as I said, I want to start painting again.
What's the truth?
Oh, acrylic. But when I left painting, I was into construction. I had big pieces of wood, and I had my husband, I would be the boss this time, and tell him how to route out the different planes so it would be light and dark and dimensional. And so this is more or less where I am now, and I just feel I have a lot of ideas to just keep going in.
Very good.
We should add, for most of these people are not coming to the Thursday lecture, so they don't understand some of the deep resonance that's here. In the Pythagorean quaternary, there is a mystical realization. In music, it's with the way in which four, the square, the quaternary, operates in sound. So that the Pythagoreans discovered that in musical harmony, thirds and fifths and octaves were harmonics. Notice that the four, not dealing with fourths, quarter notes, anything like that, but the four as a pivot shows that the third and the fifth and the octave are three related together because of itself. This is just the way in which the deep self works. You never see the deep self. But what you do and what you plan and what turns out are harmonized and coordinated because the deep self is there. It's the fourth. It is the stability. It is the harmony. But only its octave, its third, and its fifth show up in any kind of expressive analysis or manifestation. So someone literally who says, "Well, I don't see God in the world. There's no possibility of that." There's nothing else that you do see. This painting is wonderful for this quaternary because you've been very assiduous about it. Every aspect in there. Wherever there's a beginning of a triangle, a triad, there's always a sense of a fourth. For instance, on the right-hand side of the painting, the second volume down, there's the lavender volume in the top. The second volume is a green. Now look at the light green within the darker green. It starts clearly to be a triangle. There's a fourth that comes in. Why? The canvas itself contributes to it. It's a four-sided triangle, if I can put the words in there. This is the mysterious fourth. It's always there, but it is only able to be conscious in an operative appreciation. Art requires an operative appreciation, not a static analysis. However, the static analysis is always good preparation for the operative appreciation. There's all the difference in the world between aesthetics and psychology, but good psychology helps aesthetics to be realized. But you still need the aesthetics. You can have 100% psychology. If you don't have an aesthetic sense, it doesn't do you much good. Somebody else. What else do you see?
Oh.
Yeah, let some other people talk. Carol, go ahead. Okay. Where does your eye, let's start from the beginning because this is why, where does your eye first go to that canvas, Carol? Yeah, come back. Which would be triangle? Can you go on point? Oh, your eye immediately goes there and not to the yellow and black bars? Well, that's interesting. All right, if your eye goes there, where does it move to? Where does it next go? Up or down or sideways? It goes up along. Can you show the line? Just step up there and and point to the line that your eye follows. Help her with that chair, somebody.
Just up that way.
Oh, up that way, okay. So your eye goes diagonally upward from that green volume there. I see, and your eye sweep. And when your eye sweeps up, Carol, does it stop up there? Does it go off the canvas? Goes up into the golden walls, and what do you see up in the golden walls? Do you, are you able to come back to the canvas in your eye? How do you come back into the canvas then from the walls? Let's try something. Turn off the light. Let's make the walls a little less golden and a little more normally dingy. How does your eye come back into the canvas after going out of the diagonal? For some of you doing your paintings, notice how important a frame can be. What do you see next, Carol? Okay, and you move down from that. You see the orange and black bars, and then you sink down in your vision to the pink, right? And where does your eye move from the pink? Which direction would it move? All right, your eye doesn't see that. Yeah, but your eye moves someplace else. Right. It moves. Let's step back a little bit because you're a little bit too close to it. Okay, your eye comes back in the same way that it went out. Comes back, but instead of going out on the upper edge, it comes back to the volume. So the strength of that volume helps offset the powerful thrust of the diagonal to go off the canvas. And then, because of the modulation of the orange and the black, the eye is able to repose somewhat and sink to the intense pink volume, which itself is shaped to move to the right, which your eye does. And evidently you're not stopped by the black bar, the black vertical bar, but your eye moves completely by a geometricity to the point of the triangle, regardless of the fact that the point of the triangle is now no longer pink, but it changes to black, to green, and to red. And the very tip of it is buried in a bar of lavender, it looks like to me. I'm not sure, I don't have my glasses on. Does not the triangle point extend somewhat subtly into that? Does it actually then touch the dark green? It does. It goes all the way to that line. Okay. Okay, let's go to Songhok. Where does your eye begin, Songhok? What do you first see? Which green? So the same area, but the opposite.
Yeah, it's like I sink into this.
You go.
Deep inside of it.
And then what happens? You go up.
I hit the bar. I come down here.
All right. Now let's move your hand silently in that form.
It's like I go in here.
No, just silently, sweetheart.
Okay.
All right. Now what is that? What is that? When you put that movement up, what shape is that?
The star sign. It's part of the star.
Try it once more. Silently. Watch how your hand moves. You're drawing lines. Okay, stop there. What was that shape? A triangle. Now you thought star, but it actually ritually was triangle. Notice that there's a symbolic differentiation actually happening in Songhok's vision. The triangle is what is primordially there But she sees the star movement. Why? Because the triangles are subordinated to a faceted integration, which is star-like.
Plus the triangles left open.
They're all left open.
Yeah.
So that the faceted points mm-hmm. tend to constellate symbolically rather than geometrically. That geometrically there are triangles here, but symbolically there are stars here. If you move your eye and keep track of the way it moves. Notice here that the eye constantly is kept in motion. There's no place, there's no center where the eye would stop. And that's like a star drawn without taking the pencil off the page. It just is a continuous motion. So that you have here, a good title for this might be The Continuous Motion of a Triangle. But the theme is a quaternary.
That's what I want to
say. Go ahead.
The first feeling I had, the most important part for me was the four bars going down that are like divided and changed.
Can you point to those?
Yeah.
Some people are unexperienced at seeing. Thank you, Sylvia.
There's four bars.
All right.
And then I counted the five dark lines. And then my eye went to the three and the three here. And then you spoke about the harmony and the resonance. And I had the explanation, you know, like a rational explanation of what was I experienced.
Turn the light on, if you would, my friend.
No.
Yeah. And show again so people can follow.
I feel the four here that then transforms, but I could still feel the feeling of the four, which is like a real axe.
Yes.
And then
it's a forceful
the
complexity.
Five, the three and the three.
The four, the five, and the three. In fact, if one then thinks four, five, and three, you have a right triangle, not just a triangle, but a right triangle, which is a Pythagorean triangle. And notice that what's peculiar about a Pythagorean triangle is that the squares on the sides give one a sense of balance. The square on the longest side is equal to the squares on the two littler sides. Notice the incredible play, not only in geometry, but in geometricity. In geometry, the right triangle is balanced because of an esoteric symbolic realization about the squares. So the quaternary of the whole structure, of the structure as a whole, is what gives the integrity to the composition, though the composition itself is all in triangles, or triangularity, we should say here. Triangularity.
Anybody else? Come on, guys. I haven't seen the pictures.
I have the next one.
Okay.
All
right. Start off. Yes.
I really put on feeling tone because that's where I often am. And yet, so, and because I, this is nothing against you because you run it, but I don't relate to geometry and all of that stuff. It drives me insane for very friendly reasons in my history. Teacher, I hate that reason. But I relate to it on the color thing. And when she did it and I saw the colors, I was like, you know, because, and then I started to see the symbiology of it. And the feeling tone of it, to me, is so amazing because it's, you know, traditionally the spiritual colors of violet and indigo, turquoise is healing, pink is love, you know. And then, as I really begin to get into it and get the feeling of the movement I get from the emotion, this to me is
American Indian, you're saying.
And it's also masculine, whether it's digital or Indian. It's like the masculine energy, and it's resonating, and then it's falling. And the interesting part is, somehow in the mind of the beingness of the person, it's being very intricatized, and then suddenly it falls into the feminine for me. And it doesn't, not suddenly, it just sort of blends into the feminine for me. And here behind the feminine is this wonderful primordial symbol.
Right.
What
that's the right
call my people.
Yeah. The right triangle of loveliness.
And this is a very feminine thing to me, and it's almost dress-like, excuse me, everybody. and it moves into from this bright pink into like love. I mean, it moves from the indigo is like the ultimate mystical, thing that you move into, moving into the void, which is no void. And then here's the healing, and then here's the magenta, which is sort of a passionate power, but passionate in the soul level, not the physical necessarily. And then ending up in love. And that energy goes right back to the masculine.
Yeah.
And yet it's here and it's moved and it's ready to go again. I mean, to me it's like ready to move up again, see? And it's cyclical. So I don't necessarily see it in those forms. I feel it as a cyclical thing. It's like I think you're fabulous.
let's show one more thing in the way that you do. With your hand, put your thumb on the point of the breast. Yeah, and put your little finger on the point of the other triangle. Yeah.
Ah!
Now.
I love it.
Now you have it. Now you have it. That's right.
Yeah.
So you can see that your feeling tone is quite accurate about what that painting does also. That the geometric talk, the Pythagorean talk that we were using, is a facet. But Linda's feeling tone, comprehension, is so pure about it that she could come to appreciate not the geometricity of it, but the emotional integrity of it.
And may I say something?
Yeah.
About this. You were speaking about this, and this is only an assumption from my experience, nothing. But you were speaking about this, like it was just this whole, transform. I kept seeing transform, I'm transforming, and I'm having a lot of problems in it. And this, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just as wonderful.
Yeah.
It's so primordial and so fabulous. I mean, I just had to say that.
Wonderful.
Because she sort of pushed this one away like it didn't exist anymore.
Good for you.
It's just as wonderful. It's just another part of
I
your
being. I responded to this original painting with a lot more feeling tone and a lot more like my whole being was communicating with your original painting.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a much more feeling tone reaction to it than this current one. This
mm-hmm.
current one forced me into a mental space.
Mm-hmm.
Could I just say something? What I find is so magical about artists is I mentioned when I did these figurative drawings. I started, drawing like everybody else, and then it went to these people with just pouring out distortion. Everything was like that. That's the way I saw it. And then all of a sudden I was taking this advanced painter's workshop in New York, and we had to do a project. And I'm not good in abstract math at all. I'm very good. I had A's in bookkeeping and arithmetic, but I could not do the geometry. And then one time I brought in this little painting and my instructor said, "Who did this?" And I said, "I did." And she was just amazed. I mean, I didn't even know that I had that type of, deep-seated geometrics or whatever. And that's
because this is more characteristic of your work.
Feeling. And then, then I sort of discipline myself into, I can discipline it, it just comes that way. So it's very fascinating. That's why I brought those, because I thought people might be interested in seeing how that happens. Because I don't know how it happens, you know.
Well, these two are related.
They are?
They're related in a very occult way. And I'll just point it out to you so you can see it for yourself, for your own self-development. Mm-hmm. These two paintings should hang together for a while.
Mm-hmm.
This triangle and this triangle together in their color schemes are the basis of this painting.
Well, that painting,
I have to use a chemical term, that painting fractionates its color matrix into these two polarities. This polarity is the one that gives, and this polarity is the receiving matrix. But that painting, let me point it out, that painting is very valuable. Without that painting, this painting is missing a very important element. When we get to the history section, when we start in July, the history section, it becomes all important for consciousness to be able to refine itself. We have to be able to have our lives. Those lives have to be our lives. And that is the level to which we have to go in order to appropriate that. Otherwise, someone else's sense of history co-opts our lives into their purposes. Now, you may want to do that, but you should have the right to say no. And mean it. Now, everywhere in the world, that's a revolutionary understanding. Anytime authority understands that that's what's being taught, they'll clamp you down. That's why I'm not in universities anymore. Because when you get to that level of recovering your own integrity in your own life, the right to your own life, your own history, then you're free. You're free in the sense that you choose where you want your energies and dedication to go. And it may well be that you wanted to go with this group of people towards those purposes. And you can really get behind it. Or you may want to reserve X, Y, and Z out and say, well, all that, but not this. But you have to have the right to do that. And that's what this whole educational program is for, is to remind you in a way, not to give you that right. No one can give you that right. You have that right, but to remind you that you have it. That's what's important to me. It's worth a lot. Let's end for the day.
Thank you.